Well, I guess they can call a meeting to order with six members because we don't have any motions to make, because today we're just going to be reviewing the governor's proposals and getting input. So, Ms. Egard, why don't you come up first and explain to us Governor Fuentes' thought process, maybe would be the best way to word it, huh? Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members.
You've got Ms. Tanis, okay.
With thought process, Mr. Chair, do you want me to talk about our agency budget first, or do you want me to, and then talk about the systems? How do you want to do this?
Well, I think we'll maybe talk about your budget proposal and then the governor's proposed budget cuts for the higher education system. Okay.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. With regard to our agency budget, Susan Hegar was off to higher education. A little sleep deprived today. $2.7 million is our state budget for the office, and so a 4% reduction is what we're looking at administrative, and that's about $111,000. We're challenged, I think, like many state agencies were, in trying to reach these numbers, in part because, was it back in 2004 or 2005, I can't remember, the agency and many others were hit with an administrative reduction as well, and there was an $83,000 or $84,000 cut then. Then we were given a salary supplement of $84,000, and so this is an additional reduction. So it's challenging. But what we did is we basically, our process inside the agency was we met with each of our directors, we asked them to look at their budgets, look at the trend line over the last 5 years, and then make recommendations to us. We, together as a group, worked through the reductions and then the recommendations, and then we kind of weighed things against each other. So the types of things that we're looking at in our budget would be like employee development, reducing that by about $8,000. We have some memberships. We share a membership with the State Higher Education Executive Officers Organization with MNSCU. We're not going to give that up, but we do save some money because we're joint with them. But there are a couple memberships that I think we could do without. Printing, we're looking at around a $15,000 reduction in printing. We've produced some financial aid publications that we could make available more of those online. We're going to be doing that wherever possible with our high school counselor guide. Some of our computers, rather than turning computers around every 3 years, we'll probably go to a 3.5 or a 4-year cycle. We can get $10,000 or is it 10 or 20? $10,000 there. Through accountability, some of the revenue that we got for accountability, we'll do one less survey. That's about $25,000. We're looking at general supplies, about $5,000 in-state and out-of-state travel. There's a reduction there of about $7,000. Software, around $5,000. So we're in looking at various parts of our budget. I think another percentage or more would mean that we would have to start looking at jobs. But with this reduction, we are able to hold jobs at the agency and the services that we're providing. What this does impact, though, is that we've been able to have some contingency money in the past. We've been able to do things like we put forward, I think it was $65,000 for the e-transcript initiative through MEC to help make that available to all high schools and colleges. We would not be able to do that type of thing again. We were able to update our phone system and do some remodeling and get some additional servers. So those are the kinds of things that we would not be able to continue to do with a reduction. But I think it's manageable, painful, but manageable, at least for the agency.
Is there any questions on the agency's cuts? Then go ahead right into the governor's proposal.
With regard to the governor's proposal, Mr. Chair and members, you know, I can't speak to his thought process. You're going to have to ask him directly about that. But my understanding is that...
I was having breakfast with him tomorrow, but after this hearing, I don't know if I will be. But anyway, if I still am, I will definitely ask him.
All the state agencies are being asked to look at a 4% reduction, and so the governor decided that, with the exception of K-12, that entities that do receive state monies, such as the UMNSCU, if you look at the state portion of their appropriation, the 3.86% reduction is slightly less than what the state agencies are being hit with, but it's substantial. So I think part of the feeling was that this burden is shared, you know, among recipients of state revenue. And looking at the fact that last year the U of M received about a 16.9% increase in their allocation, and MNSCU, I think, received about a 12.7% increase. Those are fairly healthy increases, and they were important ones. But I think the governor's feeling was that a reduction, you know, given the increases last year, was something that they could work through. Very challenging, very difficult time for the state and for entities that receive state money.
Yeah.
And Mr. Chair, I'll add, I think rather than telling them how to do it, I think, you know, obviously that was not something that he chose to get into. Like us, we weren't told how to make our reductions either. We have had to make those decisions on our own.
Well, Ms. Teagarden, you know, just regarding the governor's budget proposal, I said here, I think maybe it was 3 weeks ago, I don't remember, that I wasn't going to be the one to raise tuition again and touch our higher education system when we finally are getting back close to the numbers, you know, where they took the hit in the 2003 biennium there. And, you know, it's probably rather serendipitous. How's that for an Iron Ranger story?
Not bad, huh?
I looked it up to make sure it was correct.
You talked to a guy from St. Paul?
That this article was in the paper this morning, along with this chart, you know, that was on the back page, which I blew up, that we are here on the same day discussing increasing probably what will be an increase if we go along with it. Back on the students again, and over the years, I mean, it's shameful actually what's been happening, not only in Minnesota but across the nation. I mean, you look at these graphs from higher education across the state, and since '82, we've gone from tuition being 22% of the college income to higher education income to 36% today. So it's not just Minnesota to blame, but you know. I can't do what the governor wants me to do, and it's a dilemma because he's got a veto pen that he's been waving around, and I don't have one. But I can just tell you that I'm not going to make this kind of significant cut that he has asked this committee to take, members on both sides of the aisle. You know, when Tim Pawlenty went to the University of Minnesota and graduated in 1982 or 83, I can't remember, and I'm a He paid $1,516 to go to the University of Minnesota. And we adjusted that for inflation. In today's dollars, that would be $3,183. But that's not what the students at the University of Minnesota are paying today. They are paying $9,598. Adjusted for inflation over three times what Governor Pawlenty paid when this state had a goal that it usually kept of paying for two-thirds of our public school attendees' education. Now, you know, I wasn't part, I don't think, of creating this mess because I never supported the income tax cuts that happened in the 1999 and 2000 legislative session. You know, and even Governor Carlson agrees with me, former Governor Carlson, that Governor Pawlenty is going to have to use a range term, belly up to the bar here, and do something to solve this problem, because there's no new tax pledge isn't working, members. And, you know, I don't know what we can do, but I just, again, on the record today, want to state this. I am not going to be the one that corrects the errors that have been made and, again, forces tuition increases back to these students. So, you know, I am not going to abide by his budget proposal, and there probably are going to have to be some, without a doubt, some cuts made, obviously. But after what we've done to the students of this state in going from a goal of paying 66% of their public education to now being, correct me if I'm wrong, Ms. Higar, probably about 46, 47, 48% in that range, I just can't do it to them anymore. You know, these students came in front of this committee last year and we heard horror stories about their debt. And I don't think in a recession and economy that we should throw any more debt at them. And I certainly don't think that we should make it less affordable for people to go to college, because Minnesota in particular is having a significant drop in people that are actually going to our higher education facilities, and I think the tuition has a lot to do with it. So I guess maybe I can hopefully still see the governor for breakfast tomorrow and relay this message to him myself, but I just want to bring up the university and the Minsky system folks and see what they have to say and if their feelings are the same as mine on this, because, you know, again, this cover story, today's paper, our state's about twice the national average. We're above our peers, and it's time for us to I think, have a new mindset, new philosophy on what we have to do to not only help our students, but promote economic development and growth in this state again. And I don't think the way to do it is to make the cost of higher education so onerous that young people and those that need to go back to school and be retrained can't afford to do it. So that's all I'm going to say. If any other members want to comment on their feelings, go ahead right now or wait if you want, but let's nobody else wants to talk.
Mr. Chair, the article that you referred to in the paper was a report that our office issued, the second version of Minnesota Measures the Accountability Report. We've mailed a copy to all the members. If you haven't gotten it by now, we've got some extras here. But the affordability piece was one aspect of it, so that was the article that you're referring to. And then I think it just, from our perspective, it just reinforces the point that Pell money that's coming to us from the feds needs to go to students to help temper potential tuition increases. It's really important that it be used for that purpose.
And Ms. Hegart, I'm glad the federal government is giving us, you know, a little bit of money, and $15 million, I guess, is a significant amount of money, but when you see what we're spending on the war on a weekly and monthly basis, it pales in comparison. And the $15 million, I asked Mr. Berg yesterday what that would mean for the poorest, the lowest person on their on the proposal, and I think he told me a figure of about $380, Mr. Berg, if I'm not mistaken.
On the share.
On the share. So, I think that was on the Atkins proposal, if I'm not mistaken, if we utilize the whole $15 million. So, yeah, $380 might mean a lot to some of these students, but it's not going to solve the problem, especially if we cut Minsky and the university $25 million, and even if I put in law that they can't pass it on in tuition, they'll figure out a way to pass it on in tuition, because that's who pays in the end anyway. So, Representative Ruth.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. I share your concerns, and I certainly don't want to take money from our higher ed, and I doubt that Governor Plunkey does either. And I think but the one thing we have to remember is that our budget, you know, we had $2 billion surplus last year, and now we have a $1 billion deficit. And our budget is increasing over 10%. And it's unsustainable. The money isn't coming in there. So like our own checkbook, somehow we have to figure out how to balance that. So it's a matter of trying to find out. So I'm hoping we can find other ways, but somehow, you know, in Minnesota, fortunately, we do have to balance the budget. So that is the issue with spending too much money.
Representative Ruth, I disagree with you, and I don't think we have a spending problem in this state. We have, and I'm looking through my legislative portfolio here as I speak, because where's my 50 richest Minnesotan ones? Oh, that's finally stuff. I might have left it in my office. I think I showed it to some university students, in fact. But let me tell you what's happening. You know, in a recession, there are still people that make money. And they're not most of us sitting in this room. In wartime, there are people that make a lot of money, and there's probably nobody in this room. In 2004, when I believe it was, or maybe it was 2003, I should go upstairs while I'm talking here and find my... I got my Iron Range Puff money even, Mr. President. But in 2003, I think it was, when the Senate had proposed to raise the income tax on the highest income earners in the state of Minnesota, Representative Ruth. And at the time, I asked Ms. Manzi up in our income tax expert, nonpartisan staff upstairs, you know, because the governor, remember, it was one of his cooperative moves again, and he called it profoundly stupid, the proposal. So I asked Nina Manzi to look up and tell me what the richest 50 Minnesotans got back in those income tax cuts in 1999 and 2000. I said, just pick the richest 50. Well, they wouldn't give me 50, the Department of Revenue, because they said I'd be able to figure out who it was. So they gave me 47 one year and 53 the next, and 55 the year I asked for, 2005. And in that year, projected income of the richest 55 people in the state of Minnesota, the poorest one had an adjusted gross income. Now, if I'm not mistaken, adjusted gross income, Ms. Novak, is when their Philadelphia lawyer hides all the money they can, right? So their adjusted gross income, the poorest one, Representative Bruce, of those 55 Minnesotans had an adjusted gross income of $14.5 million, and the collective wealth of those 55 people was $1.7 billion. And they had a $10.1 million income tax cut because they probably were anticipating this gas tax and they couldn't afford the nickel. So what actually happened, though, is last year I asked Ms. Manzi, when we were proposing that same tax increase on the wealthiest Minnesotans, I asked Ms. Manzi to update those figures for me. And members of the committee in the audience, listen to this, which proves my point. Those 55 people had dropped to 47 in the chart they gave me. Actual income now, not projected like I had gotten in 2003, but actual 2005 tax returns. And the richest 47 people, the poorest one was now making $20.5 million a year after their Philadelphia lawyer hid all their money. And collectively, their income growth had grown to $1.85 billion. And their tax cut from the 2000 tax bill was now $11 million a year. Those are the people who make money in recessions, who make money in wartime, who can afford to pay. Because this country was built on a progressive income tax, and that's why this state is in the hole it's in. And it's no coincidence, Representative Ruth, that there's been $6 billion collectively in property tax increases in the state. At the same time, there's been $7 billion in income tax cuts since the 2000 tax cuts. Now, Representative Ruth, I know you want to respond to my tirade.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just going to bring up a few points, and we don't want to take any more time because I know we need to continue. But I do think I would like to respond this a bit. Number one, did we figure out how much philanthropy money those people have spent? Do we know what businesses they have? Do we know how many people they are employing? And also, of those 47 people, how much money would that totally be? So just some things to think about. But I appreciate your comments.
Oh, I thought all about those people. Believe me. Representative Bruce. Oh, no, Representative Mahoney. You already talked. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to my colleague, Representative Bruce, and to the Chair. What is so frustrating, and I'm tired of trying to do taxes or not do taxes or whatever, but these children, these young men and women, are what will be building our nation, our state, our cities, our districts. They will be replacing us, and we are straddling them with debt. That is unimaginable for these kids to come out of school. I've talked to 15 or 20 or 25 that are strong young men and women that want to get back to society, and they are so bitter. They look me in the eye and say, I don't owe society a thing. I don't owe them anything. I owe my banker. And that's what this proposal does, is it puts these young men and women, the people that will replace us, that will pay the taxes of tomorrow, in the pocket of their lender. And that's not right. That's the thing that's not right. Our governor, $1,500, $1,600. I've got two kids. There's an $8,000 a year difference between their college costs, between the two years of college, when the first one went to the second one went. That is unacceptable for what we're doing to our kids. And I, for one, Representative Provena, will support you in not taking this money out of these kids. There are other budgets.
Picking up votes as we go here. Yeah.
There's other budgets. There are other budgets in our division that we can take $50 million out of.
You're right.
And I'm more than willing to help you figure that out, but I do not want to put another dime in it, out of a kid's pocket.
Representative Bly. And then we'll bring up the president.
Yeah. I'll try to be brief. I support you, Sarah.
Oh, snowballing. Good.
It seems inconscionable to me on the part of our governor to continue to have other people, low-income and middle-income people, bear the brunt of this deficit and not be willing, as he was in the past. He also wasn't willing in the past to ask the high-income folks to contribute. They're the ones being shielded. We're not shielding students. We're not shielding low-income people. We're shielding the wealthiest Minnesotans, and I don't understand why. They ought to be able to ask to contribute to this solution, and I support you in your comments.
Representative Nornes first, and we'll go by senior. Representative Detmer, and then we'll let Representative Nornes wrap it up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think you ought to figure what percentage of our state budget goes into education, K through 12, and then college.
K-12 is about 42, and I think our higher ed is about 9.5. So let's say 52-53%.
52, okay. So 52% or 53% of $34 billion. So I think we're putting a lot of money into education, but that doesn't solve the problem that we have here today. But I just wanted to make sure we point that out. Thank you.
And being a school teacher yourself, Representative Denmer, you know we could put a lot more. Representative Norman.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I came in late, so I think I know what you're talking about, but I'll take a shot at it here. I guess all I would say, as we're demonizing some of these people that have a higher income.
Nobody's demonizing them.
We're not?
Uh-uh.
Okay.
No,
it
I'm happy.
It kind of sounded that way to me.
I'm happy.
I'm just saying that we're happy that they're here. I'm glad that they live in our state. They don't have to live here. And when people with high incomes look at opportunities in this state, one of the things they look at is our tax. And so they don't have to move here. And you talk to the university and other people, other places that employ these people, they know that it's hard to recruit. So when we attack that group and say we're going to tax them more, I think we're saying you're not welcome in our state. That's my two cents worth.
Representative Norris, I think they look, what they used to look at is our educational system. And that's what we have to think about. There's a reason. I think it's not as first class as it used to be.
I don't know if you have any proof of that.
Well,
it may be more expensive, but what isn't?
Well, everything's more expensive. But as things go up, Representative Nornes, you have to pay for them. And like I said, I don't think you can disagree with me that even in recessions, there's people that make a hell of a lot of money.
I understand.
And they should. And I think, actually, of those 47 people that I didn't mean to vilify, I'm glad. I wish I were buddies with all 47 of them. In fact, I'd like to be my best friends if they're watching. But, you know, I didn't mean to demonize them. I will bet you that 40 of them are willing to pay to keep the quality of life that this state has been used to.
You ask many of them, they do probably contribute a lot of money to our system.
They do.
Willingly.
There's no doubt about it. They do.
Yeah.
But there is something fundamentally wrong with a system where The poorest 900,000 households in Minnesota are paying 12% of their income in state of Minnesota taxes, and the wealthiest 9,000 households are paying 8%. There's something fundamentally wrong with that. And that's our difference in philosophy. But we got to move on. So I'm going to call on the president and save the other comments from my three other members who want to talk again, because I can get off on a tirade, and I apologize to the whole committee for that. President Brunick, welcome to the committee, and if you want to tell me I'm off in the ozone, go ahead.
Representative Brunick, being members of the committee, I'm just certainly glad as I sit here now that you've got it out of your system. It'll be kind of a tough wedding over here.
Nice suit.
Uh-oh, here we go. Well, it's a great pleasure to be with you. I want to introduce two of our regents who are behind me, Regent Patricia Simmons, who's chair of the Board of Regents, and Regent David Metzen, member and past chair of the board, and I want to thank them for being here. We also have some students, some outstanding students from the Minnesota Student Association who are with us if you want to hear from them today. I just want to make a couple of quick comments and then take your questions. It was said just a moment ago the University of Minnesota received a 16% increase, and I think it's safe to say that this committee and the Minnesota legislature really made a major commitment to restoring funding in higher education in this last biennial session, and I want to start by thanking you for that. I should say that of that 16% increase, and $25 million of that was a special appropriation for the Mayo University Partnership. It does not go into funding the basic core operations of the University of Minnesota, but it does fund very important research partnerships that I think are going to pay off in terms of growing jobs and improving our economy and quality of life. But I do want to start with that big thank you, and I'm sorry we're here today, all of us faced with some very big challenges. I sit here today with a real sense of pride on the progress the university has made in many, many areas, in education, in research, in connecting its resources to the needs of Minnesota communities. And many of the issues that you have talked about in the last few minutes have been very deep and important priorities for the University of Minnesota. I believe we need to work together to keep higher education accessible and affordable. I think that is one of society's most sacred obligations. And we took this issue on in the midst of the deepest budget cut the university has received in modern times. It was close to $185 million, 15% of the budget base, and I remind you it was less than 4 years ago. I know it was my dowry when I was first appointed. And we decided to roll up our sleeves to make some really difficult choices at the University of Minnesota. And we have made a good many choices to cut costs, to realign our programs, and to be as efficient and as productive as possible. That's another conversation I'd be delighted to have with members of the committee and the people of Minnesota. But we also struck out to really keep higher education accessible and affordable. I look people in the eye who are part of my generation, some of them older, some of them younger, and said that we needed to be the greatest generation. We needed to avoid the prospect of pulling the ladder of opportunity up behind us, and we needed to reach into our wallets and really make contributions to scholarships at the University of Minnesota. We started something called the Promise for Tomorrow Scholarship Initiative. We had been raising $5 to $7 million a year. We now raise $40 to $60 million a year, with thousands of people reaching out and trying to help fund higher education. Now 20% of the university's endowment goes to supporting students. We also started something called the University of Minnesota Free Tuition Scholarship, and it's been little noted in the press and other places. But next fall, Pell-eligible students, our lowest-income students with family incomes of about $25,000 a year, will have a free tuition and fee scholarship to any campus of the University of Minnesota. We'll spend more than $20 million of internal and private resources to make this opportunity available. I happen to believe it's the best program of its kind in the United States. About 36% of the students are students of color. Many of them are first-generation students, as I was many years ago when I attended a university in Michigan. We've also made very substantial investments to keep graduate education and professional education accessible and affordable, but I can tell you that in many ways we face even more daunting challenges in that area, that is, in keeping medical school, study of dentistry, veterinary medicine, these professional fields affordable. That, in some ways, is one of the biggest challenges we face at the University of Minnesota. This is also a time when we've really made some enormous gains and productivity at the University of Minnesota. Our faculty and staff have brought in over the last 4 years $110 million of new sponsored funding. That's mostly money from outside of Minnesota. About 95%+ comes from outside of Minnesota through competitive grants and contracts with foundations and the federal government. And I can tell you that that's created nearly 6,000 jobs, according to the Department of Commerce, and Minnesota's economy just in the past several years. Investment in research, innovation, the application of knowledge is one of the most important things that I think our state can do, probably second only to investing in the education of our people. And I want to emphasize that once again. I mentioned that we've really had and placed some attention on productivity. I've seen some criticisms in the paper lately that I do not think apply to the University of Minnesota. If you ask me the question, can we be more efficient? Can we be more productive? I'd say yes. And I would imagine George Buckley, the CEO of 3M, would say the same. We have an obligation to try to use our resources well, but the story is really good at the University of Minnesota. We saved $8 million, or nearly $8 million, last year alone by doing a better job of prescription drug benefits at the University of Minnesota. And I could go on and on about all the other cost-saving mechanisms that were our cost-saving ventures that we've been engaged in. It's a pretty good story at the University of Minnesota, and I think it's only going to get better. How about saving nearly $5 million in energy costs when the energy costs, you know, at the pump and other places are going through the stratosphere? We did that, and I feel very proud of it. Now, how can we manage this issue? I'm not coming here to tell you that the University of Minnesota should not be a part of the solution. But I am coming here to tell you I think this cut is too deep, particularly in the context of what we've been through in the last 5 to 6 years. There are three strategies we can use. We can cut costs. But when we cut a dollar at the University of Minnesota, we cut 70 cents that goes to the wages and salaries of people, students, faculty, and staff. If we balance the budget with no tuition increases, by purely cutting costs, we will lay off nearly 400 people into a recessionary economy, lose the institutional history and the talents that they have developed, and make the university less competitive in growing outside resources, in serving its students, and doing all the other obligations that are really important. This morning I received a three to four page memo from one of our deans talking about a very serious, troubling disease that is affecting beef cattle and dairy cattle in Minnesota, a disease that could absolutely wipe out our entire industry. We're scrambling using budget reserves to try to solve that problem, much the way we approached the emergency situation that Representative Rukavina drew to my attention with respect to the mesothelioma challenge and study in northern Minnesota. So one of the things we can do is cut costs. But we create unemployment when we do that, and I just want to make that abundantly clear. I think that's a bad option. The second thing we can do is defer investment. We need to constantly invest in the future of the University of Minnesota. That's new fields, that's new ideas, that's new technology. That's all the other things that keep a place like the University of Minnesota or Minsky or a private college as competitive. If you don't invest, you don't stay even. You actually fall behind. And I mentioned what the consequences can be if we don't keep bringing in about $620 million of outside funding that covers everything from diseases and crops and animals to the protection of our food supply to the nation's health and many, many other things that I could mention. That particular number that keeps us competitive is responsible for nearly 25,000 jobs outside the University of Minnesota, according to the Department of Commerce statistics. So the third thing we can do is raise tuition. And I must tell you that that will be the last place we will look for a solution to solve whatever comes our way through this legislative process. But I can tell you quite honestly that if the cut's this deep, I frankly think it would be a dereliction of responsibility on my part if tuition wasn't a part of the solution. I'll just be blunt and straightforward in giving you my take on this particular issue. Let me just tell you what the costs are for next year, at least some of them. This is just the tip of the iceberg at the University of Minnesota. In the biennial budget, the generous biennial budget allocation to the University of Minnesota, there is $16.6 million in the second year of the biennium from the state of Minnesota. That is a $16.6 million increase. For just to cover the compensation costs for state specials, that is state-funded special appropriations, the regular core budget from the state, and tuition will take over $27 million. So $27.5 million will be required to meet the compensation obligations that are already in contract, and I feel we have a sacred obligation to honor. We have $5.6 million of obligations for scholarships, including the middle income initiative that was passed, middle income scholarship that was passed through the leadership of this committee in the Minnesota House. We have about $6 million of facilities costs, that's debt, operating expenses, utilities, and so forth. You can get a sense of what these costs are. Remember, we start with $16.6 million of new appropriation, and against that we have $27 million in roughly, or $28 in compensation, about $6 in scholarships that we're obligated to give, and then about $6 in facilities costs, and we haven't even started to make $1 of investment in what I think is necessary to keep the university moving forward. So I just want to end where I started. I believe we have to be a part of this problem. If you have a problem in your family, every member of the family should step up and try to deal with what the circumstance and the challenge might be. And so I expect we'll have to tighten our belt and do our part. But I think $27.5 million is a disproportionate share of the responsibility to visit on the University of Minnesota and my colleagues in Minnesota. So with that, I'd be happy to take your questions.
Thank you, President Bruni. Representative Hartman, would you want to comment on previous...
I do have a question for the President.
Go ahead.
Actually, all I have is comments. I don't have questions. I do want to address the point that I was going to make. Representative Ruth did raise a point of us supposedly having a $2.2 billion surplus last year. I just think we should deal in facts. And if we remember last year, we had a debate about whether inflation should be included or not. Guess what? Inflation happened, whether we wanted it to or not. So we had a $1 billion surplus. We would have counted inflation. That's the fact. The other thing is it's simply not true, as Representative Norton says, that people choose to locate in Minnesota on the basis of low taxes and to grow jobs here. And the facts are just abundantly clear that when our taxes were higher, we had more jobs and we had more high-income earners. It's clear as day. So let's just deal in facts. So to you, Mr. President, what I would say is we have a real dilemma.
Representative Armand, it was to thank the students for coming to listen to us today, because I can tell they'll be in college a few years, so it's an important discussion. Thank you for coming. Excuse me.
No problem. We have a dilemma, because we work with the governor to solve this budget deficit. We're going to have to draft some bills that he wants to sign. But if we don't work with the governor, And if he doesn't work with us and we don't find a compromise, when we leave town in May, he gets to decide where all the cuts are. First he has to drain the budget reserve, but then he gets to decide. So as much as I would like to see us put higher education off the table because of the work that we did last year, there was work that we needed to do, we're still going to have a problem because we have to put a bill out there that the governor will sign. So we need... I appreciate very much you're here talking to us. I suspect you're also talking to the governor's office about this, and that this is a disproportionate cut to your area of the budget.
Yeah, Representative Rukavina, Chair Rukavina, and Representative Hortman, I think my problem is I don't believe it's reasonable to come here given the context that we all appreciate. We all have different philosophies on what should happen to solve this problem. I would solve it differently, to be honest with you. And I would share the pain more broadly, and I'd also probably put revenues into the game. But that doesn't look very likely right now, so it's very unlikely that we can totally escape some reductions here. So I'm not coming here to argue that. But I do want to remind you that the last time we balanced this budget in the heart of a recession, the largest single cut was in higher education. Okay? And now we're back 2 or 3 years later, and the large, you can argue state agencies are, a couple of hundredths of a percent or tenths of a percent higher, and I wouldn't cut them as deeply either, to be honest with you, for a whole range of reasons, because they've gone through the same fire that we have. But now we're back again, and to me, to put higher education out at the front of the parade when it comes to budget reduction is just not a very smart strategy for the long-term future of the University of Minnesota, the MinSU, the state of Minnesota, our private colleges. If you're going to be a player in the global economy, there are two things that really matter. Smart people, people who are trained and educated to compete in the global economy. Actually, three things. The quality of life that attracts people here and encourages them to stay. And the third is investment in research and development and innovation. That's what's going to really matter. You ask any random sample of economists the same question, they'll give you the same answer. They can be conservative economists or liberal economists or whatever, however you describe economists, but they're going to say those are going to be the three keys to the global economy. We're a big player in the global economy. In 1959, we weren't a player at all. We were 29th in per capita income. And after 1959, some very smart people in Minnesota decided to invest in education, research, and development, and that's what catapulted us into the top 10 economies in the United States. We should stay there. There's no reason why we should unilaterally retreat. So I think we need to... You're going to need to put together a bill that sends a bill to the University of Minnesota, and I fully understand that. I don't think it should be $27.5 million.
Representative Black. Did you have a comment?
Yeah, fine, thanks. Well, I certainly don't want to cut the university at all. In fact, I'd like to get more money. as you know, we've spoken about organic and sustainable ag, and I'd like to see this, that could grow. And I think having a center like that in the state of Minnesota and would attract all kinds of people and business and would be a great place for us to be as we face peak oil and all the problems with petrochemicals in our agricultural business. I'm sure that Representative Welty would not like to see the ag special cut anymore as well. The things that the university does is broad and it's very important to our state's economy. I take into account the comment that Representative Nornes made about the wealthiest Minnesotans might leave our state if we ask them to contribute. Isn't it possible that students will choose to go elsewhere to other states to get their education if we continue to raise the tuition costs?
Question.
Representative Rukavina, Representative Bly, that's a tough answer, a tough question to answer. I think the quality of education in Minnesota is what keeps students here to a very large extent, and we need to make sure we keep it that way and we keep our competitive edge We have great colleges and universities and great access in this state. I mean, the community college, technical college system, I think, is as good as any you'll find in the United States. So I don't think that's the big problem. The big problem is if you don't continue to invest in all of these areas, including your quality of life issues, truly creative people will not migrate to Minnesota. It's quite extraordinary that we have such a collection of truly creative people in Minnesota, one of the highest per capita states in terms of baccalaureate degrees, flourishing art scene, attention to the environment, despite what some people may say about taxes, a really good positive business climate, because when I talk to business people, they're looking for an educated workforce. They happen to believe that Minnesota has some of the most talented people in its workforce that you'll find anywhere in the world. So those are the things that matter as much as, you know, your tax. You know, if your taxes are too high, I imagine people will really notice. But, you know, I don't think taxes are what people really care that much about. You know, they care about it, but it's not the highest thing on their list. The Met Council just did a survey, and they asked people to rank order their top 10 or 15 issues. Taxes was clearly down in the lower third. Transportation was at the top. Education was toward the top. Healthcare was toward the top. Quality of life issues were very much toward the top. And if you look at the work of Richard Florida, who writes about the creative global economy, he'll tell you that creative people stay in places because of quality of life, the opportunity to pursue their economic interests, and that's the kind of climate we need to build and develop in Minnesota.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this probably is more of a comment than a question, but I look around this table and I think there are people around the table that have, at a minimum, perhaps technical diplomas or advanced degrees. We all probably have had at some point in our lives the benefit of some higher education. Maybe it was just one class at one community college, but it's more than likely that the majority of us have had some benefit from higher education. I know for myself, I have a master's degree, and the benefit to me is I was able to go to college and have low tuition, have the opportunity to receive work study and grants and scholarships and all of that, so that when I completed my education, I didn't have a huge burden of debt. And what I'm fearful of is that we are really leaving behind a generation of students. And for all of us who sit around this table, we are here because we had some opportunities given to us. And we took advantage of those. We did what we needed to do to be here. But we also now are benefiting the state by our public service here. And I'm also fearful that we don't know who we're going to be leaving behind. We may be leaving behind some of those future brightest and most exceptional people that are going to make the millions of dollars and infused dollars into our economic system. We are a higher education and workforce development committee. This isn't just about higher education. This truly is about workforce development. It is an economic development issue, and I commend the university for doing everything that they do, the MINSU system. We benefited from that. We need to continue to allow our future students to benefit from it. Thank you.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I've got a couple of things I'd like to speak to, and to the talk of the wealthy not feeling welcome here. Pretty easily, I can say that having talked to more chief executives in the last year as the committee chair of bioscience than I'd ever envisioned or thought I'd ever want to, taxes is probably not their highest issue. Their issue is workforce. And a variety of other things. So long as they're recruiting people here in the summer, the spring, the summer, and the fall, they generally don't have a whole lot of problems. It's when they come here in January that they can't get them to stay. Two things here. President Brunick, you kind of alluded to the fact that at some point tuition has to come on the table. How about if I rephrase that? Maybe you don't have the number with you right now, but it would be nice to know the figure where the tuition falls off the table so that you wouldn't have to raise tuition. And again, if you don't have that here, you can certainly get it to me and the rest of the committee. But this is a question for the chair. Do you have or can you get us a copy of the line item budget? Not what we actually appropriate money for, but the base budget for DEED, for DALI, for every agency that this committee has jurisdiction over. I don't think that we should charge the students. If we are going to pay with taxpayer dollars to educate the workforce of business, let's start looking at where business takes its cut. They say that they can't pay the taxes, then they can pay the train. So, Mr. Chair, can you get that to us or to any member that would like that?
Mr. Mahoney, I think that Mr. Burke can work wonders. He's been around here for years, and he can get you numbers right down to the postage.
And that might be what I'd like to see, because I'd like to see that for DALI and for DEED and any other agency that we fund.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, can I make a really quick comment?
Quick one.
Representative Mahoney, I'm not prepared to give you a particular dollar amount, but I am prepared to make a commitment to you and to other members of the committee, and that is when we look at this challenge, the University of Minnesota is going to look first at cutting costs, but still trying to save employees. Because if you lose your critical workforce, you can't stay competitive. You know, I mean, this is, we get roughly 22 to 25%, depending on how you count, of our funding from the state of Minnesota, which means we have to be very competitive to get the rest. And you know that from the work of your committee better than probably half the people who work at the University of Minnesota. So we'll go there first, cost cutting first. We'll also look at ways we can slow down investment and maybe spread that out. We'll also look at ways we can use the reserves to cushion some of this. But you can't use reserves to balance a long-term budget. All you're doing is passing the obligation into the future. And to me, that's just not good budgeting, and we shouldn't practice it at the university. So tuition will be the last resort, and I'm hoping we don't need to go there. With the House initiative of last year, we do have what the net impact on our students, projected impact, will be. Last year it was under 3%, the increase with the middle income, at least for families with $150,000 adjusted gross income or below. It was slightly under 3%. This year it's slightly under 5%. That's in statute, so we're not going to mess with that unless you tell us we have the permission to do that. And I think we'd have quite a fight with the chair of this committee on that particular issue, and I don't think I want to go there. I think it's one of the biggest challenges we have in higher education, that is to keep higher education affordable for middle-income families.
Mr. President, I promise you that I will be expecting and listening to your suggestions along with Chancellor McCormick. So, Representative Moe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Following up on a comment that Representative Hortman made, Mr. President Bruce, everyone here at the table does not want to cut funding to the University of Minnesota. We're committed to higher education. That's why we're serving on this committee. Yet, as you know, we have a great impediment across the road here, was keeping us from being able to have a additional tools to use to balance the budget. And I would ask you, I mean, you've got allies here, but there's you have connections with people that we don't, and perhaps you could help us to advocate for a balanced approach to achieving this budget problem. And I don't know if you've already had those meetings or planning to have those meetings, but as you're asking us to do the best we can to hold you harmless, we need your help.
Representative Rukavina, Chair Rukavina, and Representative Moe, I can tell you I work the phones at least 5 to 8 hours a day on the capital bills and on this particular issue, and my colleagues are doing the same. So I can tell you we're working pretty hard on this issue. But I think at the end of the day, I think what Representative Portman said is probably going to be true. We're going to have a bill, and we're going to have some cuts at the University of Minnesota. I expect that, or I at least anticipate it.
I just hope we could find ways creatively to bring that burden down. And I promise you we'll do everything possible to protect students in the process. And I'm making that pledge to you, but yesterday I made it to 75 students, four of whom are here today, and they all took very good notes.
We want to hear from those students, too, so we're going to quickly run through Representative Detmer and then Nornis, and then we're going to get the chancellor up there, and then, excuse me, the Ms. King, and then the students.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and President Brunick. I think you know that I support the university program. Could you just maybe educate a little bit, what is your total budget? And then, you already answered part of my question, 25% of that comes from the state. And then you definitely do your fundraising, donations, and then there's tuition, and then other. Could you just quickly go maybe percentage?
Chair Rukavina, Representative Detmer, the total university budget is about $2.7 billion from all funds. And about 25% of that comes from the state of Minnesota. Of that 25%, about 25% of it is earmarked for specific purposes related to academic health, mostly to agriculture extension and related fields. About 20% of it comes from tuition. About 20%+ comes from grants and contracts. That's not a fungible source of revenue to the university. You have to do what you said you were going to do if you get a grant award. And then the rest of it is things like ticket revenue and parking revenues and other sales and services of various kinds that people do at the University of Minnesota. So the part of the budget that's mostly fungible is about $1.2 billion, you know, and that's the part that comes from the state and comes from tuition. And that part covers the core operating expenses of the University of Minnesota. And most of the rest of that budget is on a self-supporting basis.
Mr. Chairman, and just a follow-up. What percentage do you have where you have alumni that over the years have been part of the funding of the University of Minnesota?
Chair Rukavina, Representative Detmer, in the last campaign, we had something like 88,000 alumni give gifts. So you get gifts from alumni and friends of the university all the time. They generally go into endowment. The endowment pays off about 4.5% to 5%. It's roughly 5% of the university's budget. About 95% of that, again, is dedicated to particular fellowships, for example, a fellowship in cardiac surgery or some other field. So I can't take most of that money and apply it to reducing tuition at the undergraduate level. There's a lot of misconception about endowments. So when you see these numbers, many of these are deferred gifts that you haven't even booked yet. But the University of Minnesota does quite well among public institutions. So we're about sixth in the United States in terms of our ability to raise private money, or at least we have been. I take a lot of pride in that, and particularly pride in the fact that we've put so much emphasis on scholarships and fellowships for students. And I'm going to make that the number one fundraising priority as long as I'm president of the University of Minnesota.
Representative Nora.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're going to ask about your reserves. The state is using, the governor's suggesting we use our rainy day fund to help, solve this problem too. And you had mentioned reserves. And I don't know if this is a doable thing to, you recall we have shifted some money in K-12 and we've had some budget problems and basically just delayed something. But I'm wondering if when we're done with this, and the universities use, say, some of their reserves, NSCU's use some of their, that we look at that as an area that we replenish in our funding year next year before we do anything else, so that we make them whole, if that's a doable thing, so that we can get them back to where they were and then move on from that point when we're in a little better financial situation, assuming we will be. Just a suggestion.
Thank you, Representative Norris, and I think what Representative Norris is referring to is when we put that after the rainy day fund carry forward account is maximized that number we want, then
and
next
the next
dollar,
right?
Yeah. We've done that before with K-12 shifts and spending.
Just a
okay, thank you, Representative, or thank you, Mr. President, I think. And Representative Haas, do you have one final question for the President?
No, just a comment.
Okay, thank you, Mr. President. Mr. King, why don't you come up then?
I used to be a park director, and, you know, the fine curve of money coming in, they would always say that, you know, well, there's some things that can't be touched. And I used to refer to those as sacred cows, but every time you have a sacred cow, you have a sacrificial lamb. So that, you know, is a difficult situation. And I'm glad that we're putting some sacredness to the students, because otherwise they become automatically the sacrificial lamb. And that when we look at rainy day funds, those rainy day funds that are identified, you know, we have philosophies on those. But in any system, in government systems, there's siloed money. There's money in categories that are budgeted and taxed for to go into those categories. Yet often, if it's not spent, it often sits there, or it may move back into the general fund. And I think some analytical analysis of those accounts, so that we're best spending that money, even by the people that are in control of it, may have some good suggestions, so that we're using the money that we budgeted for and taxed for very wisely, rather than safeguarding it at a time that we need to use our funds wisely. I can better explain that in the elevator than I can with this microphone.
Thank you. Ms. King, welcome to the committee.
Well, press the button.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Laura King, and I'm the Vice Chancellor and Chief Financial Officer for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. I'm here today on behalf of Chancellor McCormick, and if you were with us yesterday, you heard us extend his apologies for not being able to be with you today. He had a death in his family and is away making funeral arrangements. I think the Chair has heard about Uncle Bill. Uncle Bill was Chancellor McCormick's 105-year-old uncle, who has been cared for by the Chancellor's wife for these last 3 years, and he has now passed on, and they're home with the family. So he extends his apologies for not being here with you. Just a little preamble here before I get directly to the question that the Chair asked us to address. The Minnesota State Colleges and Universities educate nearly 400,000 students each year in credit and non-credit courses, or about 64% of all the undergraduates here in Minnesota. Each year we graduate more than 33,000 students, and more than 80% of them stay on here in Minnesota to work or to continue their schooling. We welcome this opportunity to speak with you today and to share with you what we think some of the consequences are at this very difficult challenge, both for you certainly and for us as well. I'll start by reviewing just a few historical parts of our budget to put our heads back into the budget since we left it last year. Historically, state appropriations have covered about two-thirds of our operations. And if you were in committee last night, you heard the presentation of the bill that the students have brought forward to try to return to that relationship. That changed in 2003 when our budget was cut by $47.6 million. And the next 2 years, it was cut again by another $191 million for a total reduction of $240 million. We are now at just under 50% state supported in our general operations. And 50% supported by tuition. That's a very, very aggressive change to go through in less than 10 years. It happened in large part because of the double-digit tuition increases that we've had to put forward just to maintain operations. And it also translated into our inability to pursue several very critical initiatives that you have since in the last year helped us with. Last year, you and the governor gave us a very generous increase. We finally got back almost the state appropriation funding level from 2002 and 2003. We're about $20 million off that number from 8 years ago. A cut of $26 million puts us right back where we were before last year. We believe that the appropriation increase that you provided for us last year came with it several messages that we heard from you. You asked us to keep tuition increases low. You asked us to provide higher salaries to both recruit and retain higher quality faculty, and you asked us to expand the programs and services that your constituents were asking for and that we knew were demanded both by our students generally and by our target group, particularly the underrepresented, underserved students, who we believe are in large ways for Minnesota's future. You also saw the need for us to renovate our aging technology system and provided funds for us to do that. Next week, the board will be asked to adopt the Fiscal 9 budget. With your help, we were delighted to bring a budget to the board that provides for tuition increases of 2% for the colleges and 3% for the universities. This budget also includes substantial salary increases that were recently negotiated and provides services to recruit and retain our target students with resources that you helped us with. The proposed budget cuts put all of this progress at risk. 1 year ago, we would not have proposed such a low tuition increase or taken the steps on salary negotiations that we have if we'd known these budget reductions were coming. We now have three choices, and remarkably, they're the same three choices facing the University of Minnesota. We can roll back our new investments. This would slow down such critical investments as better preparing the workforce, investments you helped us with. We could ask the campuses to absorb a 4% base reduction, which means fewer offerings, fewer faculty, fewer services, fewer new programs, less advising, and less counseling services. And I think some of you know that we're already in Minnesota at both the K-12 and the higher education level amongst the lowest in that ratio in the country. Or we could increase tuition, and it would require a 4% tuition increase to replace the $26.6 million proposed reduction. None of these choices are attractive to us, and I don't believe, nor have I heard here today, that they're attractive to you. At our board meeting next week, we'll start the discussion about the actions to balance the budget. There's no way for us to remove this much money from the budget without a serious impact on students, on faculty, and on the strategic initiatives that include providing the educated workforce that Minnesota needs. Last year, we asked for a $180 million increase for the biennium to cover anticipated inflation of $57 million, and you supported us with a $150 million increase. Keeping in mind this $26 million cut doubles over the biennium, it translates into a $50 million reduction in the out biennium, which leaves us then at about $100 million compared to last spring. We would not have brought forward the tuition increases or the strategic investments had we known this was coming, and I don't think there's a person in the room that believes that we would be able to stay on the course we're on if these reductions continue. Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I'm happy to take any questions, but I wanted to make members aware that this came as quite a blow to us, and it substantially altered the plans that we've been pretty excited about.
Thank you, Ms. King. You know, I've worked with you for over a decade, and even though we were on, you know, different sides of the aisle, I don't know if we were or not, but anyway, you've always been very competent and straightforward, and I appreciate that. And Sister President Brunick has stated that he expects there's going to be some type of cut. I think you know that there's going to be something. I'm definitely not going to be in the range of $25 million for each system, but you're very capable, and I would hope that you would go back and talk to Senator McCormick and others in your central office and figure out a way and maybe, you know, some steps that we can take to ensure that the students aren't going to be any tuition.
Mr. Chair, that's our last option as well. I was reminded this morning, recall the tuition wheel? Remember this from a couple of years ago? It came to mind when I was reading the newspaper article about the study released by the Office of Higher Education. And frankly, I was really kind of distressed about that study and distressed about the headline, because while it's absolutely true that we have comparatively high tuition, not necessarily compared to all our peers, but the study shows that, particularly at the colleges, that tuition is high. What that study didn't tell you is that when you look at total spending, state appropriations plus tuition, we are right at the national average. And half the peers that they compared us to in that study spend more than we do. And they're able to do that with their lower tuition because they have higher state support. So it's a full story that didn't come out. Our tuition's been high. We don't like it. Our services have been good. Our total spending is average. And we're going to work very hard to preserve that commitment on tuition.
Thanks. Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate both the chair's comments and yours.
Thank you.
with regard to keeping tuition low, I think that's been a message I think you've heard all day and all last year from this group. My question to you is, one of the budget requests that came forward last year you touched on, and that was technology, and and there was a particular number, and I don't have those with me, so I'm just going to talk in generalities. There's a particular number that was brought forward of Minsky needs last year. We gave money, we appropriated money, and it's my understanding from some documents I've been shown that perhaps the amount going to technology is considerably higher than was requested last year. And so I guess there's no question that technology is changing and it's becoming far more important in higher education than ever before, and it will continue to as technology changes, increase and change. But given the fact that your appropriation local college appropriation is so much higher than the request that we got last year, is that an area that you could cut that would, while I'm sure it will break up some plans that you had, be an area we could look at as a legislature that wouldn't affect students?
Okay.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I don't know what documents you're looking at because we're not spending more than we asked for on technology. So that's sort of the first point I'd make. The second point I'd make is that of the budget for technology, about 15% of it is a direct grant flowing through to the colleges and universities to invest on their campus technology network. So there would be a campus impact on that. The third point I'd make is that that technology investment is all about student and faculty benefit. So to roll it back or to slow it down plays right through to student impact. Now, that said, it's absolutely on the table. The whole thing's on the table because the whole thing's been tipped upside down with this recommendation. So we'll have that conversation with the board when we move through this in the coming weeks. I wouldn't want to tell you that we're not going to look at it. We are going to look at it, but it also will have student impact, and it will have faculty and staff impact, and I wouldn't want to mislead you with that.
Okay, and Mr. Chair, the amount wasn't the 15% that goes to the individual institutions. I was talking about it. And perhaps I was shown erroneous information, but it appeared that the administrative pot of money was much larger than had been requested in the documents I saw. If that's not
correct.
Okay, if that's incorrect, I apologize.
It's much larger than what we had on our spreadsheet.
Yeah.
I guess the accurate term, but not larger than what they
than we had. Right. When we sat here and said this is what we're giving, and we had a line item that said technology.
To represent our,
yes.
But that's the debate we've had, and we'll have to adjust it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to appreciate the fact that you are willing to put that on the table as something we can look at. Thank you.
Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chair Rukavina. And to Ms. King, you mentioned that if you were to have to absorb this amount that has been recommended that we cut out of MNCU, that it would result in about a 4% reduction in all of the campuses statewide. And I'm just wondering, at the central office, how much of a reduction are you planning? And is that 4% or is that more than 4% at the central office?
Ms. King.
Mr. Chair, we don't have plans one way or the other, Representative Welty. If we were to eliminate the deficit by looking at the central office budget, we'd have to eliminate the central office twice in order to raise $26 million. So the central office budget is not big enough to absorb this reduction. If we did do it across the board to all the campuses, of course we would include a reduction to the chancellor's office. And we may do more than 4% in the chancellor's office.
Thank you, Chair Rukavina. And Ms. King, I just want you to know I'm not advocating that we eliminate the central office, but I am advocating that if we are going to take a look at the impact that this cut could potentially have on higher education, that I'd hope that we'd look at administration as well. And I just wanted to have that on the record because you mentioned campuses, yes. And I just want to make sure that we're looking at administration.
I think Ms. King already emphasized
it. If I might add one other comment to that, Mr. Chair, and you may hear this from other sectors as well. This whole thing about administrative budgets is a little distressing to us because we know already that our administrative costs, if not the lowest. The last data we had, we were the 44th highest. In other words, only 6 states spent less than we do, centrally and on the campuses, on administrative costs. So while it's certainly the case that we always strive to be more efficient, it's also the case that we're already tremendously efficient compared to every other system of or a single college in the country.
Ms. King, maybe you can get the committee members that information because it always comes up as a plan.
I'd be happy to.
Information. Representative Hartman and Ornis, can you wait because I want these students to be able to. I need to cut either of you off, but it's getting... And we understand the committee's coming in right after us. So let's get the university students, there's Ms. Olson and Mr. Engelman and Mr. Scadam here yet. Thank you, Ms. King. Maybe you want to hang around for questions. Thanks. I see the president of the university took off, but I know that you're kind of a down-to-earth person, and maybe you can wait around in case any of the committee. We're almost done. I appreciate students from the university being here because... You don't have as active as a role as the students from the State College Student Association and the University Association. So we're glad to have you. And go ahead and just tell us your opinions, if you would, of what the governor's proposing here today.
Sure. My name is Emma Olson. I am the undergraduate student body president at the U. And I'd first like to thank the chair and the committee members for having us here today. In choosing to go to the university, I went partly because of the cost of attendance. I was deciding among a couple of different universities, and when it came down to it, a factor was cost. I've had a great opportunity here. I've been involved in student government, internships at both the State House and Congress, political groups, and I've had outstanding classes in everything from biology to astronomy to political science. And I really want to make sure that when considering this cut, that you make sure that future students can have the same opportunities that I've had. I just really want to stress that. Also, I want to make sure that you are aware, that the community is aware, that President Brunich really does go the extra mile to make sure that students do have scholarships. In dealing with the stadium, he's actually gone above and beyond and looking for scholarship opportunities as well as funding for the stadium. So.
Thank you. We'll save questions from committee. Mr. Engelman, is it, or Scott?
Scott. Mr. Chair and representatives, I really thank you for this opportunity. I've never been in this sort of environment before, so it's kind of exciting. I'm the vice president of student body here at the University of Minnesota. I don't have all the accolades that Emma has, but I really am excited to be part of the system. I really feel it's an honor to be part of the system. Right now I'm working a student job in the undergraduate admissions office, and I've gotten calls, and it breaks your heart when you listen to a student call up. They're like, hey, you know, I'm a junior in high school, senior in high school, I'm really interested in attending University of Minnesota. I've got a good GPA, I've got good grades, you know, I have these great plans, and you think I'm going to be a good fit? And I go, yeah, you know, you sound all right, Minnesota kid, that's good. And then And then they say, well, what's the cost of attendance? And I go, you know, $9,000 about for an in-state student. Well, what about other costs? Well, we predict about $7,000 for your housing, room and board, all these issues. And then they're like, well, that's okay. I'll just, you know, look somewhere else. And that's just horrible, really. And I just really appreciate all the efforts that you guys put forth to try to make it so we don't have to increase tuition. So I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. And I assume you're Mr. Engelman.
Oh, yes. Chair Covina and members of the board, let me first say that this is an honor for me to speak today, and I thank you for allowing the students to come and present to you today. My name is Adam Engelman, and I'm a senior majoring in political science with a minor in urban studies. I currently serve as the vice chair of the student representatives to the Board of Regents. I was deeply honored when President Olson approached me and asked me to come and speak today, but I also have a little bit of trepidation. I started to contemplate what was the best way to come and speak to the lawmakers to convey to them really the importance of the university students, really to convey to them the importance and the stake that students have within the university, and lastly, the best way to convey to you all the money that we desperately need. It's easy for me. I see it every day. I interact with students who work two or three jobs to pay off their tuition bills. I interact with students who have to contemplate or debate whether to buy a textbook for a class because they do not have that adequate funding. I interact with students who approach their professors and ask them if they could email their papers instead of actually printing out copies to save a little bit of money. I finally came to the conclusion that the best way to convey this message was to speak of my own story. I am actually from the state of Pennsylvania. And every time I inform my fellow students that I'm not from Minnesota, they always ask me, why did you come all the way to Minnesota to come to the university?
So it's a long story, but I'll try to tell it as fast as I can. I had an older sister, actually, who came to university as well from Pennsylvania. We had family friends from Pennsylvania who came out here to start a small cattle farm. And she came out here to visit and really just loved the culture of Minnesota, the grassroots culture, the value of education, and decided to come out here to the university. When I was looking at universities 4 years ago, most of the colleges I was looking at were small private schools in Pennsylvania. But my parents also encouraged me to look at the University of Minnesota, a big public school. And I must say that I came out here and I just fell in love with the university. I fell in love with the political science program, one of the most revered political science programs throughout the country. I fell in love with the culture of the university and the grassroots political organizations. I fell in love with the eclectic student body. I wanted to interact with students from all different types of backgrounds, not all necessarily from the same economic situation. All this was possible, though, because I was offered an out-of-state scholarship. I have $11,000 off each year for my tuition because of the Goldie Gopher scholarship, or I believe that's what it's called. And I think the situation we are facing today is that there are many out-of-state students who really would fall in love with the university, but unfortunately do not have enough funding to attend here. The reason I think this is so important is because if you look at the demographics of Minnesota, it is drastically changing. We know in the next few decades, less and less students in high school are going to be going to the university. Therefore, we need to make sure that we're getting the best and brightest from these other states. In essence, you want to see more people like me coming from other states, coming and helping the economy of the University of Minnesota. From quotes and statistics that I reviewed, nearly 80% of students who come and go and attend the University of Minnesota and other great universities throughout the state stay here and contribute to the workforce. We need this money. I also want to reiterate the fact that 70% of the money goes directly to individuals who are working at the university. These can be professors, these can be our custodial staff, and they can also be students who are working that $8.25 job an hour just to help pay off their debt and tuition bills. As a political science student, I realize that your job is very difficult and you all represent such different constituencies, but I really think that education is vital for the future of the state, and I really think that we need to attain students, the best and brightest from all over the world, if we want to compete in the global market. I thank you for your time today. It's been an honor, and I really encourage you to have as much funding for the university as possible. Thank you.
And we have one other.
I'm Dustin Norman. I'm a representative from the Greek community. I'm the president of the Greek community at the University of Minnesota. I'd like to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the representatives for being here and allowing us to speak. I have a story that is similar, but I'm not from out of state. I am lucky enough to be the firstborn in my family and the first one to be able to go to the University of Minnesota from my family. And because of that and getting into my university allowed me to go. Unfortunately, I have a sister who was not the firstborn. She was accepted to the University of Minnesota, but because of financial reasons, she could not go there. That is unfortunate. It becomes something where a family has to make the decision of which child is born first, which one can get in first. I mean, the competition between me and my sister is not something that I would like to have to deal with. And it's unfortunate for her that she has to go to a university that isn't up to the standard of the University of Minnesota. And that she had to factor in just cost. She is brighter than me. I'll admit that. But that doesn't mean that she didn't have the same opportunity to go to a university that is better than mine. But cost was the biggest issue. So if you can put as much money as you can into the university now to make it affordable for families like mine that may have a smarter third, fourth, or fifth child, it makes it that in the future you get the best and brightest. And I would say for that, please, please give money to the university.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that. I'm not the smartest one in my family either. Thank you. Any questions for the students? Thank you very much, then. For the students, Representative Harmon?
No, it's just a point.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And then Scott and who else do we have? Scott and Kara and JJ, you want to come down? Where's JJ? Oh, there he is. Okay. And I saved the best, you know, for last. But you guys have been around, and I appreciate the fact that we finally got some activity from the University of Minnesota Students Body. And I hope you come around more often, like your peers in the Minsky system, because they've done a lot of legwork for you over the last year in tuition and bookware, textbooks and everything else. So I really would appreciate a little more presence by the university students. We need you all the time. They're here all the time. So come on up and see, especially the political science majors. So, you know, welcome.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Scott Pullman, President of the Minnesota State College Student Association. I believe that everybody did get a copy of the written comments, and to try to save some time, I'm going to skip over going through all of that and just flip to the three most important highlights of the entire memo. And that is, now we certainly understand that any specific area can be targeted by the legislature to reduce spending. We would recommend that you look first to alternative options in lieu of simply setting the education budget to balance the state's deficit. More specifically, one, lessen the proposed cut to the public higher educational systems by redirecting a portion of the anticipated state grant surplus to minimize the load of the systems. With this particular proposal, the devil's in the details, and if you look up above, we're recommending that you consider redirecting 10 of the $15 million back to covering part of the state. $10 of the $15 million anticipated surplus in the state grant program to minimize the blow to the systems with by covering $5 million for reducing the proposed budget cuts by $5 million to each of the systems, but still leaving $5 million in the state grant program to allow them to make sure that they have enough to hold harmless the current grant levels as well as some proposed increases to the LME. I encourage you to be creative and find alternative ways to avoid any further cuts to the system. And then allow students and stakeholders and other stakeholder groups who work directly with the Office of the Chancellor and the Mentee Board of Trustees to decide how any potential cuts to the system would be made and not specifically target any areas of emphasis in legislation if cuts are inevitable. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll conclude my comments and thank you for questions.
Just a formal, I certainly hope that the Chancellor's Office and Board of Trustees also brings in the students' bodies to receive suggestions for them, as I'm sure the university will. So, welcome, Ms. Brockett.
Hello, my name is Kara Brockett. I'm the state chair of MSUSA. We're taking a slightly different approach in that we truly believe that MSU should not be cut any money to make up for this deficit. As Vice Chancellor King mentioned, the $26.6 million cut that would be taken from their budget, and this translates to roughly a 4% tuition increase. $3 million for 1% at the colleges, $3 million for 1% at the universities, totaling $24 million with 4% increases. But if it were to be made up with tuition increases, that would be a total of a 7% increase at the state universities and 6% increase at the colleges. And as many of you are familiar with our debt campaign that we did last year, many of our students have been plagued with debt, and as Representative Mahoney mentioned, many of our students are very fearful of what they will have to do once they graduate with such significant debt loads. I have no real fear that Minsky would make up this cut in tuition. Their commitment to lowering tuition has been phenomenal this year. The Minsky Board of Trustees has done a lot in their power to really take this 4% cap and see what they could do in just manipulating numbers and trying to find some money in other places to help bring down tuition, and that's been wonderful, and we're very, very thankful to them for those efforts. But as it was also mentioned earlier, and as you can find some of my comments in the article in the Pioneer Press, our concern lies in the quality of education. If we continue to cut higher education and continue to cut the Minsky system, even if the effect doesn't hit students on tuition increases, or even if we can maintain tuition increases to 5% or below, what's that doing to the quality of the education? And then what does that do to the quality of the workforce that then goes into Minnesota? And that's what our major concern is. And such a cut will begin to go back to some of the cuts that we saw in the previous years and all the way back to 2003. If we look at those cuts, what did that do to the quality? And if we're just now beginning to make up for those cuts, what does the quality of the education look like now? What could it have been had we not endured those cuts? And if we can fight these cuts now, what will that say about our quality of education in the future? So I just really want to keep that in the forefront of your minds as you begin to look at how we can make up for this deficit. We understand it's a very serious issue, but our association truly believes that we shouldn't be taking cuts from MNSCU to protect higher education and the quality of the education we're giving to the students and the future of the state of Minnesota. I'm open for questions.
Thank you. JJ, you want to wrap it up here? We've got to get out of this.
Yeah, I'll be real brief, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is JJ Jilpe, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota State University Student Association. And I think Kara and Scott summed up pretty well, but I just wanted to tell you a little bit of story. You know, when I first came to, you know, I was a student both at the Old Duluth Community College Center and MSU Mankato, and I came to work for MSUSA in March of 2003. And it was within the first 2 months of my coming on the job when we had that big $191 million cut. And obviously it was hard after only being here for a couple months. And it's really interesting to see, you know, the progress this legislature under your leadership, leadership of everybody on this committee that we made last year. And it's really sad to see that we're back here doing this again. And I hope that you can do whatever you can to hold the MNSCU system harmless and to hold students harmless in this process. So that's all I have to say, Mr. Chairman.
We'll do our best, and we appreciate the work that you've done around here the last couple of years. Do you represent Hartman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The only point I wanted to make is the same point I made to President Brunich, but I don't think I made it very well, is they do better with us than without us. In other words, if we leave town in May and the governor has to make these cuts, tuition's going to go up a lot. And so in order for us to get a bill that can be signed, we're going to have to propose a cut to higher ed because evidently that's where the governor feels it's important to him to cut. So I would ask you to understand that if it were up to only us and we didn't have to get along with the guy with the veto pen, we wouldn't be proposing any cuts to MNSCU or the University of Minnesota because of the work that we did last year. But without us, if you're facing unallotment, you're going to get a big hit.
Well, you know, six and one half dozen and the other half and we're boiled down to, and I don't disagree with you because the last time unallotments happened, I think my area and Minneapolis and St. Paul in particular took the brunt of the cut, but it gets to the point where you just don't want to do somebody else's dirty work anymore. Tomorrow we have Deed, we have Dolly in front of the committee, and we have two minor bills, so members, we've got other agencies.
No, it's fine.
Meeting is minor.